last time we found that Jesus taught the only thing that matters in life is what?
Fellowship with Him.
And He said the only one thing is needed. Only one thing is needed. And it was fellowship with Him. It was what Mary was doing. And so we're studying ways to seek and find and enjoy that fellowship. How do you have that fellowship? And how do you enjoy it? And there's several different ways to do it. And so far we've only been studying the first way. And that is hungering and thirsting after Him. Longing for His presence. That's what gets you motivated to seek Him. And we almost finished last time. We got through. There's four ways to get yourself to hunger and thirst more. And we covered three of them last time. We'll cover the fourth one today. But first I want to just kind of remind you what we're talking about. Nothing will drive you closer to God than hungering and thirsting after Him. And He will reward you for that. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5:6, He said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for..." Why? Why are those people so blessed? Yeah, they'll be filled. They're going to get rewarded with the very thing that they're longing for, just because they longed for it. Isn't that amazing? You just want it bad enough, and so you get it? I mean, think about that. What a gracious God we serve. Have you ever heard of any other religion where people are rewarded just for wanting something?
Scientology.
Well, that's not really... They imagine that they'll be rewarded, but... But it's not any kind of gracious God that sees that and then rewards them. But in Christianity, God really does reward. You get credit just for your desires. How would you like it if other things were like that? How would you like if school were like that?
Yeah.
I mean, you really want to know the answers on the test, and so you get an A.
Or
you
just want to have
a test. You play a basketball game, and if you just want a basket, you get 2 points. Now, God does really care about your actions, too, but only in as much as your actions show the desires of your heart. That's the only thing He cares about. Just like there's sin in the desire for sin, so there is virtue in the desire for virtue. You understand what I mean by that? It's a sin to murder somebody, right? But it's also a sin to want to murder somebody. If you want to murder somebody, something's wrong with you, right? In the same way, it's righteous to do godly actions, but it's also righteous to want to do godly actions. And when you want it enough, then you'll eventually get it. So the key to getting fellowship with God is wanting it really bad. The hungrier you are for food, the more you enjoy that food when you get it, right? The main way to glorify God is to enjoy Him, to enjoy spending time with Him and enjoy being in His presence. The hungrier you are for that, then the more you're going to enjoy it when it comes, just like food. If I go out and ruin my appetite 20 minutes before Tracy makes me my favorite meal, and I eat a bunch of junk and ruin my appetite, and then I come in and I sit down in front of this huge meal of all my favorite food, but I'm not one bit hungry because I stuffed myself full of a bunch of junk. So then I sit there all through the meal, and I'm just kind of picking at my food, and I'm not really eating it. It's obvious I'm not enjoying the meal. Does that honor Tracy? No. How do I honor her in a situation like that?
Eat it, even though you're
full. Well, even better. What would be even better is, if I wait and I save my appetite, very good, Nikki, that's right on. If I save my appetite through waiting, and I let it build up till I'm practically starving by dinner time, then I'm so hungry when I come to this table that I could just about eat dog food and enjoy it. And then I sit down in front of my favorite meal with all my favorite food. I'm going to enjoy it so much I can hardly stand it. And then when she sees how much I enjoy what she made, that's going to honor her and make her feel happy. It's the same way with enjoying fellowship with God. You honor Him by really enjoying spending time with Him, and you're only going to enjoy that if you build up an appetite for it and start hungering and thirsting after it. And once you have that appetite, you're going to hunger and thirst so much for fellowship with God that nothing's going to be able to stop you from spending time with Him. You remember the story that Jesus told in Luke 15 about the prodigal son?
Yeah.
The prodigal son. That's the story of the guy who, there's these two sons with a rich father. And the one son gets tired of waiting around for his father to die to get his inheritance. And so he just goes to his father and says, "Look, I want my inheritance right now." And made, of course, the father really sad, but he said, okay, I'll give you your half the inheritance. And he gives him his inheritance. The kid takes off, leaves home, leaves his dad, goes off, and just spends the money on sin and all kinds of wild living, partying and everything else. And then he finally runs out of food. I mean, runs out of money, and when he runs out of money, he runs out of food. And when he runs out of food, he gets hungrier and hungrier until finally he's so hungry he gets a job taking care of pigs. It's the only job he could get. And when that job didn't earn him enough money to even buy enough food to eat, and he was very hungry, you know what he did? Yeah, Luke 15:16. Well, he wanted to. He said he longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. He longed for pig food. He tried to satisfy himself with pig slop, but it didn't work. But then the next verse, listen to the next verse, verse 17. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and I'm here starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father. I mean, there's people that are working for my dad, and they got more food than they can eat. You see, it was his hunger that drove him back to his father. When he first got hungry, he thought he wanted pig food. But then when he was starving, and he came to his senses, he realized, no, what I need to do is go back to my father. And that's what we need to do. When you have longings, when you try and satisfy those longings with substitutes of this world, that's just like eating pig slop, and it's not going to satisfy your soul. Only if you get hungry enough to where you go back to your father, go to God, will you find satisfaction for your soul. But if you eat the pig slop, and what do I mean by pig slop? What's an example of some substitute that's like pig slop? Yeah, new toys or clothes, friendships, those kinds of things. If you substitute, when you have longings in your heart, and you substitute, that longing is really longing for fellowship with God, but you substitute earthly things for it, then it's like eating pig slop. And if you eat just enough pig slop, it's not going to satisfy you, but it might keep your appetite down just enough to where you'll never come to your senses and go running back to your father like the prodigal son did. So, how do you do this? How do you get so you're hungry and thirsty for God? What do you do when the pleasures of this world, sinful ones and non-sinful ones, just all the pleasures of this world, seem so much better than fellowship with God? I mean, you might sit here in this group time after time, every time you come here, and you leave and you think, you know what? Fellowship with God is far better than any of the things that I desire. But then Monday comes, and those other things seem so good, and fellowship with God seems so boring. And there are some people who think, you know what? I could never enjoy reading my Bible as much as I enjoy reading a good fiction book, or my favorite magazine, or some sin. There's no way I could even imagine enjoying praying more or reading the Bible as much as I enjoy going to the mall or watching a movie.
Washington.
Yeah. So how many of you, if you're honest, sometimes feel that way? I can't imagine enjoying praying or reading the Bible as much as I enjoy, you know, whatever fun things. I mean, okay. Here's what I want you to imagine. And I think this might help, just imagining this might help. Imagine a guy who's got some kind of a disorder and he starts eating and drinking all kinds of bizarre, disgusting things. He just drinks acid and eats every bug and chews on sharp rocks and he just does these weird stuff until finally he destroys his mouth. He destroys all his taste buds and he destroys his ability to taste and he destroys the part of his brain that can understand taste. So now he can't taste at all. His taste buds and nerves in his mouth are completely ruined. He can't taste anything. Now he can't enjoy food one bit. Absolutely can't enjoy it. If he puts food in his mouth, he can't even feel it or taste it. It's like just chewing up cardboard or something. Well, his life kind of gets worse and worse until he just becomes pathetic. You see him, he's just off by himself all the time. You see him at Thanksgiving, and you're so sad for him because everyone but him is at the table, just thoroughly enjoying the food. Nothing but smiles all the way around the table. Everybody's laughing and enjoying each other. They're eating turkey and stuffing and potatoes and warm, flaky crescent rolls and butter on them and everything. And pumpkin pie and apple pie and cherry pie and ice cream. And Oh, everybody's just enjoying the food so much, and they're all talking and laughing around the table, and you feel so sorry because you see this guy, and he's not sitting at the table with everyone else. He's off in the corner by himself. He sees the joy that everyone else has, and he wants some of that, but he can't taste anything. And his nerves and his tongue are so badly damaged that the only way he can get any feeling in his tongue, the only thing he can ever feel, is if he takes a battery, 9-volt battery, and touches on his tongue. You ever done that? Touch your battery in your tongue and it kind of zaps you? That's the only thing he can do to get any feeling.
But it does that all the time.
Yeah, so he just does that all the time. Yeah, he's got batteries in his pocket, he does that all the time. He knows something's wrong with him, so he doesn't. He tries to only do it when nobody's watching, you know, when he's in private. But you see him off in the corner all by himself, and he just keeps touching the battery on his tongue so he can feel something. And you feel sorry for him. So you get this nice piece of pie, cherry pie, ice cream on it, you bring it over to him, you give him, put a little bit of it in his mouth, and he spits it back out and goes back to his battery. That's what it's like when you read the book of Romans or you read the book of Psalms and it does nothing for you, but you read a magazine or some book and you really like it. Or you commit some sin and you really... Or when you would rather go to the mall than go to church. Fellowship with Christ is like that big Thanksgiving dinner. And going to the mall or reading a magazine or something is like putting a battery on your tongue. And there are so many Christians that have gone so long without enjoying God's presence, and they spent so much time enjoying the world, that their sense of taste in their soul has become so ruined that all the little thrills of this world seem better than what God offers. But it's not because the pleasures of sin and this world are really that great. Those things are like the battery on your tongue at Thanksgiving. It's just that your senses are so deadened that that little zap from the battery, that sensation that you get from sin, is all you're able to feel. You can't feel anything else. You can't taste anything else. The guy without taste, when he takes a bite of pie, you know, he tastes nothing. It's like chewing cardboard. He can't imagine how eating this cardboardy stuff could possibly be better than putting a battery on his tongue. That's what it's like for you when you can't imagine how reading your Bible or praying could be more enjoyable than watching a movie. When you read all God's laws in the Bible and His commands in the Bible, God is like the head of a household who's at Thanksgiving dinner and he says, okay, only two rules in this house. Number one, enjoy the meal. Number two, no batteries. The Bible is like a book with just those two rules. Enjoy the meal and no batteries. All the rest of the Bible is just kind of explaining those two things, what those two things mean. So, when you sit there and you say, I can't imagine enjoying praying and reading the Bible as much as I enjoy doing these other things, that's because those other things are like a battery. You can't imagine this stuff because it's like your taste buds are messed up, but this thing is like Thanksgiving meal compared to a battery. Everybody understand that illustration? So, you go over to the guy with the battery and you talk to him and he says, you know what, I know the battery's against the rule for this house. I want to stop using the battery. I just don't have enough self-discipline. Well, what's the solution for him? You have a family member like that, what are you going to do? You're just going to go over and keep giving him more batteries and say, well, we all have different tastes. No. You're going to take him to the doctor and try and figure out what's wrong with his taste buds and have surgery or something to get him so that he can have taste buds again. If you loved him, you would do everything possible to get him to start enjoying food again. Even if he thinks he loves that battery so much, you know he's not getting the enjoyment out of that he could get from real food if he would just learn how to taste again. The pleasure of the world is like that battery. And a lot of people, there's a lot of people that will never become Christians because they don't want to give up their battery. They say, you know, God has this rule. I can't have the battery. And I don't want to give... They think if they give up their battery, they'll have no pleasure left in life. And it's because they don't know how to taste. But what God is offering is the feast. And when you still don't have any taste buds, and God's offering the feast, what it requires in order for you to be willing to give up the battery? faith. You have to trust him. When he says, believe me, this beef is really good.
Faith is the doctor.
Well, yeah, God is the doctor. Faith is when you trust the doctor enough to whether you go to him. So if you can't enjoy the feast right now in your life, you really don't enjoy prayer, you really don't enjoy reading the Bible, don't just throw up your hands and say, oh, well, I guess I just don't enjoy fellowship with God very much. Oh, well. Don't settle for that. Beg God to fix your taste buds so that you can feast on his delights and enjoy it. We all wish that we would desire that more. We all wish that we could desire fellowship with God like the psalmists did. Because then prayer and fellowship with him wouldn't be a discipline or chore. It'd be something you really couldn't wait to do. Last time we found out there's three ways to get your taste buds back. Three ways to get yourself to hunger and thirst. Anybody remember what those three ways are? Without looking at your bookmark? Number one is beg. That means you beg God, ask him to fix your taste buds.
Want.
Well, these are three ways to get so that you want. Okay? Wait. Turn all the pain of life into waiting for God. Use your discomfort and all the suffering of life and all the pain and sorrow and frustration of life to remind yourself how much your soul longs for God. And then number three.
Pray.
That was the first one. Big. Remember. Let all your memories of the good things of the past be memories of God showing you what his love is like. And every night, as you go, you lay down in bed, you replay in your mind all the good things that God did, and remember those things, and the good things he did in Scripture as well as in your life. So, three ways to get yourself to hunger and thirst more. Beg, wait, and remember. And then, now we'll do a fourth one. And the next time, we'll move on to a whole new topic. The fourth one is in Psalm 34:8. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Taste and see. Remember last time I told you that we should get so that we can't wait to spend more time with God, just like a kid can't wait to open presents on his birthday or at Christmas? Let me ask you something. Why does a kid get excited about a present? How does he know he's going to like it? Yeah, but when he looks at those boxes, I mean, you sit there, you look at some boxes, and you're thinking about, okay, unwrapping those things. How do I know if I'm going to enjoy that or not? Maybe I'll enjoy it, maybe I won't. How does the kid know he's going to enjoy it? Aha! Because he's done it in the past, he's tried it in the past, opening presents, and he remembers that he liked it then. The only reason the kid gets excited about presents is because of the past. You ever seen a one-year-old on his first birthday open presents for the first time? To him, it's just a box. He could care less about it. You have to make him open the present. He doesn't want to open the present.
It took like 2 hours.
Yeah. He couldn't care less about what's in there. He doesn't even know if there's anything inside. He doesn't get excited about that when he sees the box because he's never tasted what it's like to open presents before. So he can't make himself get excited about it. But when you see a big pile of gifts on your birthday, you get excited about it because you remember from the past what it's like to open presents. You've tasted and seen that opening presents is fun.
Yeah.
Why do you think David couldn't wait to go into the presence of God? Because he had tasted it and saw that it was good. He had experienced times with God that were so sweet and so good and so satisfying to his soul and so exhilarating that he automatically had this kind of longing for the next time. That's what it means to taste and see. So pray for that. Ask God for that. Say, God, please, let me have experience of your love that is so enjoyable that I'm going to get a taste of it and I'll just want more and more of it. Pray that every day. Say, God, let me just once, have an experience with you that's so awesome that I can't wait for the next one. Let me just taste it. There's a popular brand of potato chips on the bag. On the bag it says, you can't eat just one.
I can't.
Yeah, there's a lot of us who have proven that wrong. We've, just because of that, we purposely grabbed one and ate it and walked away. But people only do that when they're trying to prove the bag wrong. Any other time, it's true. You really can't eat one. You just eat one, and you want to eat a whole bunch more. What they're saying on that advertisement is the chips in this bag taste so good that even if you're, and this is kind of true, even if you're not in the mood for chips sometimes, I mean, you don't really want chips, you're not craving chips, but you eat one, and then all of a sudden you get a taste, you want some more. Put some more in your mouth. Or not just chips, but some other snack. You know, you just, there's certain foods that are like that. They just sort of create a, what are those things, Cheetos, or some of those kind of, I don't know about, yeah, for some people, green bean casserole, I suppose, yeah. That's how it is with fellowship with God. If I don't have a hunger for fellowship with God, it's because I've never really tasted it. I've never really tasted what it's like. So our goal is fellowship with God, to get just enough of a taste of it so we will crave it. My goal is for my life to be either, every moment of my life, to either be feasting or tasting. When I have my time alone with God in the morning, or I'm in church with all God's people worshiping together, then I want that to be feasting on His presence. And so it's satisfying. And during the day, when I'm just going about my normal routine and I don't have enough time to concentrate on God very much, I want every moment possible to be at least a tasting that builds my appetite for the next feasting time. But what I want to avoid at all costs is using God's goodness without tasting it. Now, who knows what I mean by that? Using God's goodness without tasting it. Using God's goodness without tasting it is like enjoying some gift from God without paying any attention to God. So that you're using the gift, but you're not enjoying the presence of Christ. You're not enjoying fellowship with Christ. So He gives you something like a good friend, or a movie to watch, or some toy, or whatever. And you're using that thing for your amusement, but you're not enjoying fellowship with God while you're using it. When we enjoy a gift from God without paying attention to God while we enjoy it, that's like, it's like if I wanted to get to know you, and so I said, hey, I'm going to take you out to lunch. And so I took you out to lunch, and you say, yeah, I'll go to lunch with you. But then as soon as the food comes, you just grab the food and then take off by yourself, and you go off in the corner and eat the food by yourself. All you're doing is using me to get food, but you don't really care about spending time with me. That's what we do to God when we use His gifts without spending time with Him, without enjoying His company. So think of a time this week in your life when you used a gift from God without enjoying God. We do it a lot, don't we? I mean, it's when you're trying to think of examples. I don't know if you're like me, you're probably thinking, well, where do I start? Yeah. I can think of 50 of them just today. That's kind of scary, isn't it? That's what we want to get rid of. You know, taste is an interesting thing. I was thinking this week about taste. A taste is an experience that you can't know. It's something that you can't know any other way besides actually experiencing it. No amount of knowledge can replace the experience of taste. If I could get some food that you've never tried in your life. You've never tried some certain kind of food. And I could put this food up here on a plate, and I could give you a lecture, an hour-long lecture, of exactly how salty that food is. I could show you a graph of super salty and not salty at all, and where it falls on that graph, and what the texture is like, and how firm it is, and how much fat it has, and how much sugar it has, and everything, and go for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours teaching you all about this food. And you would still have, at the end, have zero idea what that food tasted like, right? Well, you wouldn't really know the taste. I mean, you could know something as certain, you know, a certain amount of salty, certain texture, whatever. Still, you don't know what it tastes like. If you'd never tasted a marshmallow in your life, I could put a marshmallow. You know, I could give you a marshmallow, and you could feel it with your fingers and squish it, and you could listen to it, and you know, study it and everything. But if you don't taste it, you're not going to know what it tastes like. The only way to know taste is to actually experience it. That's why you can sit in church and hear about God for 50 years and never really love spending time with Him. Because you can learn about Him for 50 years but never actually experience fellowship with Him. You never taste it. And if you never taste it, you'll never want it. Everybody understand that? You need to experience God's goodness. And not even all experiencing is full tasting. It's possible to just wolf down a bunch of food in the morning and just swallow it so you can get enough calories to get you through the day, but you're so distracted you don't even stop to actually taste and enjoy the goodness of the food. Is that possible? Yeah. Yeah, we do that. You can do the same thing with God. That's what you do when you have your devotions. Just because you figure, well, I need this to get me through the day, but you don't really stop and enjoy God. Some people have devotions in the morning, and it's more like taking vitamins than it is like feasting on a wonderful breakfast. Yeah, you're not really enjoying it. You're just trying to get benefit from it. The vitamins of God's Word are funny kind of vitamins for your soul because they don't work unless you enjoy them. Another thing that can keep you from tasting is if you have something else in your mouth, like gravel or vomit. Gravel is like the pleasures of this world. Vomit is like sin. If you have the gravel of this world in your mouth, or if you have the vomit of sin in your mouth, you're not going to be able to enjoy any food. Right? Because you can only taste one thing at a time. If you're trying to enjoy sin, or enjoy the world apart from God, you can't enjoy God at the same time. You can't taste two different things at the same time. You got to go one way or the other. You have to pick one or the other. In fact, it seems to me that it takes even a certain amount of time after you spit those other things out of your mouth before you can enjoy fellowship with Christ. It takes a while for your mouth to get cleaned out enough to where you can actually enjoy a real good tasting thing. Even when you've repented, it's hard to taste the goodness of fellowship with God right after you've committed some sin that's really grievous to God. That's one reason why you should be scared to death of sin. Because when I sin against God and I choose to delight in something other than Him, it's like putting vomit in my mouth. And it's going to be a while if I do that. Even if I spit the vomit back out, it's going to be a while before my mouth is going to be able to handle tasting something good. And so you can't have fellowship with God. If I decide to sin now, even if I repent, it might be a while before I'll be able to enjoy fellowship with Christ again. That's a horrible thought. I mean, that's an incredibly horrible thought. That I'm going to have to go a period of time now before enjoying fellowship with Christ. So what you should try and do is make your whole day a tasting of the goodness of God all day long. Constant tasting of the goodness of God. Every time you enjoy something, you enjoy a drink, or you enjoy a movie, or you enjoy laying down and getting some rest, or whatever, remember that experience of His, the experience of His love is better than that thing you're enjoying. So every time you have a sense of enjoyment, say, you know, God's love is better than this. Remember Psalm 63? His love is better than life. The experience of His love is better than life at its best. His love is showering down. You can imagine yourself walking through life and His love is showering down on you like a downpour of rain. Imagine God's love is like the sweetest tasting drink you've ever, your just absolute favorite drink you've ever drunk. And it's not only good tasting, but it's super good for you. It makes you really healthy and all that. So you're walking through this downpour of this best tasting drink that you could ever imagine. But even standing out in this downpour, just because you're standing in it doesn't mean you're necessarily experiencing God's love. You have to stick out your tongue and taste the sweetness of it. Just because you enjoy all the gifts God gives you doesn't mean you're enjoying fellowship with Christ. You have to stick out your tongue. You have to make it your goal to walk around all day with your tongue sticking out. Do you understand? What's the difference in life between walking around in the downpour of God's love with your tongue sticking out or not sticking out? Same thing we've been talking about all along. It's using His goodness without enjoying Him. You're not tasting of fellowship with Christ. You're just using God's gifts. Now, let me just wrap up here by talking about the idea of gaining a taste for something that you don't already have a taste for. Learning to like something. If you don't like some food, like say you don't like green beans, and you're trying to learn how to like green beans, even though you don't like them, it's possible, but it's not easy. Maybe it did. But you can't just flip a switch, just say, okay, from now on, I'm going to like green beans, you know, and then you like, right? There's more to it than that. It's possible to learn to like something that you don't like, but it's hard, and it has a lot to do with your attitude, doesn't it? Most of you are probably too young to know what it's like to go from not liking something and then learning to like it. But you can do that. Just like you can learn to like an activity that you don't like now. Like decided to say, kickball or whatever. But if you're trying to learn to like some activity that you don't like now, it's never going to happen until your attitude is right about it. I mean, if you've always hated hiking, suppose your whole life you just hated hiking. You think hiking is the dumbest thing you've ever seen. But you're trying to learn to like it. Because say your best friend loves it and you want to spend time with your best friend, so you want to learn how to enjoy hiking. Okay? So, you go hiking. Every Saturday you go hiking with your friend. And then each time you go with them, the whole time you're hiking, you're thinking to yourself, this is dumb, 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 dumb. Every step you're just thinking, dumb, dumb, dumb. And you know, in your mind, the whole time you're walking, you're thinking, what a waste of time. I mean, what could be dumber than hiking? We're going nowhere for no reason, and just so we can turn around and come back. And what could be dumber, you know? Well, if you have that attitude, are you ever going to learn to like hiking?
No.
Yeah, of course. You have to have an attitude of faith. Now, what is an attitude of faith? If my friend thinks that this is so great, there must be something good about it. There must be something wonderful about it. I believe that if I can just discover what that good thing is, then I will enjoy it. That's the attitude of faith. So the whole time you have an eye out, the whole time you're hiking, you're saying, I'm not enjoying this, but I'm watching. I'm trying to figure out what is it that's so great about this, because I know that when I figure that out, then I'll enjoy this. You have that attitude, then you'll learn to like it. You're not thinking, this is dumb, this is boring. You're saying, this is wonderful, and I know once I figure out what's so wonderful about it, I'll like it. That's the kind of attitude you need to have with spending time with God. So if you're honest with yourself, you'll admit, you know what, I don't like praying. I don't enjoy prayer. I don't enjoy worship. I don't enjoy reading the Bible. And if most Christians were honest, they'd probably say that. And if that's you, don't get discouraged. It's okay to say, I don't really enjoy seeking after God, as long as you also say, but I believe God when He tells me that those things are the only things that are going to bring me the greatest possible pleasure and joy. And up to now, I haven't enjoyed them. And I've done without fellowship with God so much that I don't really enjoy it. But I believe that if I can just find a way to make my prayer time real fellowship with God, it would actually cause me to enjoy it so much, I would enjoy it more than I enjoy anything else in this world. I believe it's that good, if I can just see it. You have to believe that in order for it to work. So, how you increase your appetite? Beg, wait, remember, taste. Beg God for it, wait, turn all the pain of life into waiting, remember memories of good things in the past, taste and see that the Lord is good. So you can always do something to increase your hunger for God. When times are hard and you don't feel good, that's when you wait and remember. When times are good and you feel great, that's when you taste and see. And always, always, always beg God to increase your thirst for Him. So, okay. When David talked about his deep, intense desire to go into the sanctuary, you know what the sanctuary was in David's time? A tent. The temple wasn't a building until Solomon's time. So it's just a tent. You want to picture yourself, just imagine this. you're a stranger wandering around from some foreign country, and you overhear David. He's in the desert. You bump into him. You overhear him talking to somebody else about how he just longs to go to the sanctuary, and he longs for that more than he longs for anything else in the world. And you think, wow, this sanctuary place, whatever he's talking about, must be some incredible place. It must be like better than Disneyland, you know, because he's the king. I mean, David has been everywhere. He's traveled everywhere he wanted to travel. He's super rich. He's had all the authority of being a king. He's popular. He's famous. He's got women dancing in the streets, singing songs about him, how great he is. He's had adventure like you've never believed. I mean, he's been in battles and wars, and he's done all kinds of incredible stuff. He fought Goliath and defeated him. He's killed a lion and a bear with his bare hands. I mean, this guy has just done all kinds of amazing, exciting things. And yet, out of all the stuff he's done, the thing that is the most exciting to him was this sanctuary. And you hear that and you think, what kind of a place must this be? And you know, so you decide, I'm going to make it my goal in life to visit that place. I can't wait. So you finally go there, and you're surprised when you get there and you see it's just a tent. It's just a bunch of animal skins sewn together and set up as a tent. And you say, well, what's inside there? So you go inside, and it's just dirt floors. It's poorly lit. It's dark in there. You can't see much very well, and it's not one bit exciting. There's some kind of interesting things in there, and they're pretty, you know, beautiful furniture and stuff, but it's not really the most spectacular scene you've ever experienced in your life. And so you look around for 2 or 3 minutes. You're kind of interested for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then finally you're bored. Completely bored after 3 minutes. There's nothing to do in there except pray and worship. That's the only thing there is to do in there. But the person that dropped you off isn't going to come back and pick you up for another 2 hours. So now you got 2 hours that you have to sit in this place. So 2 hours, you're bored out of your mind. Finally, 2 hours are done, and your ride shows up. And you drive away thinking, that's got to be one of the most boring places I've ever been in my life. And when you're driving away, you get to thinking about David. And again, you think, he's a man of adventure. He's done all these incredible things and had these amazing experiences and everything. And with all of those fantastic experiences, the most powerful, overwhelming desire in his heart is to go into that tent. And you just got to know why. And so you go to him and ask him, why? What's so great about that tent? And he answers you with what he wrote in Psalm 63:2. He says, when I was in that tent, I saw God. I actually experienced the glory and power of God Almighty in that tent. And that was an experience that tops everything else I've ever done in my life, all added together. See, David had tasted God's presence, and it made him hunger and thirst more and more. And after talking to him, you want to hunger and thirst like that. You want to experience that. And so you go back into the sanctuary, back into that tent, and on the way there, you're begging God. You say, Lord, please, when I get there this time, show yourself to me so that I get to see you, and I get to see your power and glory too, so that I will long for more that more than I long for anything else in life. And the reason you're begging on the way there is because you know there's two possibilities. You could either get there and have the same experience as last time, which would really be a bummer, or you could have this experience David had in that tent. And so the whole time you're begging God to make it like it was for David and not like it was for you last time. That's the attitude you should have every time you approach your prayer spot, wherever you have your devotions, whether it's in your bedroom or you've got some place where you go to pray. Each day when you go to have your devotions and you're on your way there, you need to have the same attitude as the guy in the story who's on his way the second time to that temple. Saying, let it be like David's experience, God, this time. Just let me see you. Let me experience you enough to where I'll see that. Got it? All right. Now, I want to get you guys started on a practice that we're going to be doing more and more as we go on. we'll just kind of start on it now. What I want you to do is pick an attribute of God each week to focus on for a whole week. Anybody know what an attribute of God is?
Something that's true about God.
Yeah. An attribute, God's attribute, anything, it's anything that's true about God, that's an attribute of God. Anything is true about God. So what are some of God's attributes?
That He is good.
Okay, He is good. That's true about God, so that's an attribute, goodness.
Unforgiving.
Faithfulness. Forgiveness. What are some other attributes of God?
Perfection.
Truth. What's that?
Merciful.
Jealousy.
Just.
Yeah.
Just.
Okay, you got the hang of it. All right, so those are attributes. Now, we're going to look at Psalm 63, and I want you to point out some attributes of God that this psalm mentions. Oh, no, I'm sorry, not 63, 33. Psalm 33. The attribute of God that we can get from verse 1 is that He's worthy of joyful praise. Right? Because it's fitting. It's beautiful. It's fitting for the upright to praise Him. So He's worthy of that. That's the attribute. All right. How about that same attribute you see all the way through verse 3, 1, 2, and 3. How about verse 4? What's the attribute of God? Right? He's trustworthy. Faithful is the same thing as trustworthy. He's right. He's true. And you got a different version. Some weird version that Kathy snuck in. All right, verse 5. What attributes do we see in verse 5? Right? Well, not that He's righteous, specifically that He loves righteousness. That's His attribute of God. He's the kind of God that loves righteousness.
He has unfailing love.
He has unfailing love, right. He's full of it. Full of unfailing love. And He loves not only righteousness, what else does He love?
Justice,
yeah. So we're learning a lot of things about God. These are all things that are true about God. What I want you to do is pick one of these attributes of God. Verse 6, He's the God who creates. He's powerful enough to create everything. Verses 6 and 7. Verse 8, He's so awesome, He's to be feared. Verse 9, again, His power. He just spoke and everything came into existence. Verse 10, He's sovereign. He controls all the plans of all the nations. Verse 11, the plans of the Lord stand firm forever. His plans, He's the God who has perfect plans that can't be thwarted. The purposes of His heart last through all generations. He's the God who watches and sees everything. All right, so you're looking at all these attributes of God in Psalm 33. Pick one. Everybody pick one that you want to think about for a week. All right, so remember your thing that you got, that you picked. This whole next week, you're going to be focusing on that attribute of God. You are going to be... Now, later on, when we cover more material, then you're going to be doing a different thing on Monday, and then Tuesday, and then Wednesday, and Thursday, and Friday for your attribute. But we haven't covered all that now, so we're not ready for that. So now, you're just going to do Monday every day. Monday's thing is getting yourself to hunger and thirst after that attribute. The experience of that attribute. That attribute is a piece of God's glory. And God's glory is who God is. So if you experience that attribute, you're experiencing God. If you experience God's unfailing love, you're experiencing God. If you experience God's faithfulness, you're experiencing God. If you enjoy God's justice or His mercy, you are having fellowship with Christ. You understand that? So you want to get so you long for that part of fellowship with Christ. Now there's other ways to fellowship with Christ, like, right, all these other attributes. But you're just picking that one. You want to fellowship with Christ in that way. You want to enjoy that one part of it. See, there's different parts about God. Just like there's different things about Tracy that I love. I love the way she looks. I love the way she talks. I love the way she treats me. I love the way she is mother to my children. I love all kinds of things about her. And so I could just pick one and focus on enjoying that. That's what you're doing right now. You're picking one thing. That one you already picked.
You're saying, I'm just going to try and get so I desire that. I desire the experience of that. So Jesse, for the next week, he's going to be trying to get so that he desires God's mercy so much that he just longs for it and hungers for it and thirsts for it, so he can't wait to experience God's mercy. And Lisa's going to try and get so she can't wait to experience God's faithfulness. Is that what you... Okay. And Faith is going to get so she can't wait to experience God's unfailing love. That's what you're trying to get yourself just to the point where you can't wait to experience that part of God. That's your homework this week. Got it? So every time, every morning, when you or afternoon or evening or whenever you have your devotion time, and you write out a prayer to God, which I hope you're still doing, read in the Psalms. And when you're reading a Psalm, just especially look for that one thing, that one that you picked, so you can learn something about what it's like to long for that part of experiencing God. What does it mean to really get so I can't wait to experience God's, and then you fill in the blank, the one you picked. Okay. Does everybody understand that? Okay, I want you to do that. Then, next Sunday, pick another attribute. Every Sunday, pick an attribute. You can pick it while you're sitting in church and listening to the sermon, or you can pick it just from reading Psalm 33 some more, or whatever. And then next Sunday, and then the next week, you'll spend the whole week getting so that you long and hunger and thirst for that one. So by the time you see me again, here at Youth Group, you'll have spent 2 weeks, one on each attribute. So you'll have had two attributes of God that you've got trained yourself to really hunger and thirst after. Now, what are you going to do all day during the day on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, all each day, to get yourself to hunger and thirst after that thing? What are you going to do? Beg? Wait. Remember? Taste. Got it? You do those four things to get yourself to long for that one attribute. Make sense? Think you can do that?
Yes.
All right. Okay, well, let's close with time of prayer. Heavenly Father, as you know, I've been thinking about the attribute of your listening ear, the fact that you're the God who listens and cares. Father, I pray that I know that that attribute, as much as I love it, I don't love it nearly as much as I should. It doesn't make me get excited like it should. I want it to. Lord, if I just saw it as it is, it would. I know I would get excited. I just need you to open my eyes. Let me taste it and see it so that I can be excited about it as much as I should be. I pray this in your name. Amen. Yeah. You know, before we break up, I just thought of something that while we were praying that's... Well, it's gonna be a problem for what we're trying to do, because you probably picked an attribute that you already like about God, that you especially like. And what the problem with that is, since you especially like that one thing more even than the other things that maybe in that song, then you think that you already hunger and thirst for that. But what I want you to, maybe what I should have done is just assign you each an attribute so you get something that you didn't pick on your own. But what I want you to realize is this. None of you, probably, I'm guessing, if you're like me, none of you get as excited about that attribute as you should. That attribute doesn't make you so long to experience it that you just can't wait for the next time you experience it. I mean, Jesse probably picked mercy because he loves enjoying God's mercy. But he probably doesn't enjoy it near enough to where he just can't wait to experience it the next time. Same thing with Faith. She probably picked his unfailing love because she already loves God's unfailing love, but she doesn't love it so much that she just can't wait to experience it the next time, to where she knows if she just experienced it, she would enjoy that more than she enjoys anything else in life. So even though you think you already love that attribute of God that you picked, realize you haven't even begun to see the tip of the iceberg of how wonderful that gift is, that attribute of God is. And what you want to see is the whole rest of the iceberg. You understand what I'm saying?